This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo, good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. It's a Tuesday, and it's game time.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is. It is the gamiest of game time because, of course, after weeks of Shire Select, we finally get to the Squire Select. Well, we've got a fun episode planned for today, but there's a couple things we got to do beforehand. A little bit of housekeeping, if you will.
Yeah.
First of all, you know, I have to acknowledge we've done a suite of episodes with you and me in the same town, the same city.
Yeah, which has been really nice. Yeah,
it's been awesome, man. Being back together again and podcasting together again, and this is kind of the last one. This is the big send off.
I know, right? Yeah, it's such a weird feeling because, you know, we used to do this all the time, and it was, it's something to really cherish now that it happens rarely.
I know. You don't get to look at this ugly mug, as frequently as you used to.
Beautiful mug.
Well, you know, it is what it is. But anyway, so the point is, though.
Speaking of mugs, we should come out with mugs.
What? we've got a great episode to dive into, though, as kind of our conclusion of our Jackson series. Although it's interesting, we'll internally consider that our Jackson series. We probably won't publish it as such, but I'm mentioning it here on the show. So there you have it. We haven't been dabbling in the whiskey before recording.
Not at all. No, not at all. Why would we do that?
That never happens with the Squire Select. No, but we do need to address a couple of a little housekeeping items. First things first.
Yeah,
we have got the International Country Squire Radio Pipe Club, which has been keeping us going for years now, and it is something that if you would like to be a part of, head over to patreon.com/countrysquireradio, where you can help support out the show. Not only do you get the benefit of knowing that you're keeping us on the air, you also get access to our first 100 episodes of content. We would love to encourage you to do that, or discourage you from doing that, to be honest. I mean, on the one hand, we do need the help and the support of the show. On the other hand, we kind of like to keep those early episodes buried, so... You know,
we feel like we've built up kind of a reputation for excellence and quality since then, and so
we certainly built up a reputation.
Say right, but you know, it the reputation that might come from, you know, more dissemination of those first 100 episodes could be tragic.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's awful, but we encourage you anyway to support us despite it, and thanks to all that do. Man, we also need to address some controversy. Okay.
Look, a thing happened, but it didn't happen.
But it didn't. See, that's why we have to address it.
Right.
You know, a lot of times there are shows, there are people in media that make gaffes. They say things that they want you to believe they didn't mean, and then they come in and apologize for it, and they have to walk some stuff back. And, you know, there is a fear of, you know, being canceled, being shut down, being deplatformed, and all
that's
that
right.
kind of stuff. There's,
yep.
there's a fear of that that's out there. We here at Country Squire Radio have always stood by our work, even when the powers that be have called us into question. And it has happened before that we've been called out on things that people think that we've done wrong. And I will say this, on occasion, John David has made comments or questioned things in pop culture, which he has gone on record as saying he knows nothing about, and said what you've already said, which is you know nothing about those
things. I don't know anything about it.
Exactly. So when we are wrong on something, John David, when John David is wrong on something, he is very good about coming forward and saying, you know what? I was wrong. This is what it was. You know, it was factually incorrect. However, there are times when we get called out on things that people say, like, hey, you did this thing and we simply didn't do that thing. And we need to be very clear about that. Of course, I'm talking about last week we put out the second in our two-part series of Shire Select.
That's right.
Where we went through these various Hobbit meals. Now, some folks felt, and I, you know, in order, I'll just go ahead and say this. In order to address the controversy, I have to say something that I wasn't going to say, and I made a commitment not to say. But for the purpose of addressing the controversy, I'm going to say it. There are people out there that feel as though that was a barbecue and pipe tobacco pairing,
specifically regarding supper.
Well, yes, the final meal of
right.
the Hobbit thing, people were making the claim
right.
that this was something that happens, that it was the barbecue. Now, I have been an advocate, I want to say, on record.
You've been pro barbecue pairing.
Yes.
From really day one.
Yeah, from day one.
Right.
And this was a you know, something that was discussed, brought up from some time
right.
to time.
Right.
And I think some listeners rightfully felt as though that was a little much. Not just the concept, but the fact that we referenced the fact that you didn't like the concept that much.
That much.
Yeah.
Because I really don't.
Yeah, you don't.
And I've shot it down multiple times.
And you never do that.
No.
Yeah. And you haven't done that.
Ever.
Ever. So, because last week was not a barbecue. Hobbit sauce, people.
It
Hobbit sauce.
Hobbit sauce. We did a supper pairing.
Yep.
Where we did a delectable evening hobbit meal with the hobbit signature tangy sauce.
Yeah.
And we paired it with, you know, delicious
pipe tobacco.
Tobacco.
Yeah.
And you know, it was just something that it's something that you do.
Right, of course.
And you know, this was I don't understand the controversy at all.
Well,
I would not stoop to that kind of level knowingly. Well. It, you know, With any of this, I mean, I think we're above that. Like, we don't,
I don't think we are above that, but we certainly haven't done it. Our positions on the barbecue pipe tobacco pairing has not changed. I'm very pro. John Dave is very against. Regardless,
go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, we both are very firm on the fact that that has not happened. That is not something we have done.
And why would you use your position as kind of the driver of the content, as we, you know, as we're controlling the, or not controlling, as we're going through the dialogue of the show, and Bo kind of drives the rhythms. Why would you use your position as the kind of the driver of the content, the narrative of each episode? Why would you use that in some clandestine way to you know, try to work in something so controversial that obviously has, you know, driven our listeners mad over time, that, you know, and for you to do something as despicable as that, really, like, put to, you know, to weave into this in a underhanded way, you know, so I obviously that didn't happen. You know, I obviously this is not this is not what happened last episode. I don't know why we are going down this lane.
The accusation is so preposterous, I will not even dignify it with a response. That's all I'll say about that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But suffice to say, the barbecue pipe tobacco episode pairing has not happened. That is not what last week was.
No.
And, you know, like, and I've said this before, I think that it will happen, but it may be literally the last ever episode of Country Squire Radio. Or start off a brand new series and usher in a new age of Country Squire Radio. But you know what? That's the last we're going to talk about it. It's the last we're going to talk about
it. It's so stupid.
But we did want to just point out that.
You would never in any underhanded, unprovoked way.
I'm not going to dignify this.
You would never bring it up like that and surprise me on air.
I'm not going to dignify the accusation.
With the recording, you know, in any kind of way to anywhere go near that right. type of event. So I just
you know, it's what is it that the kids say? I can't even. Yes, I can't even. That's what I'll say to that. And,
the kids say, I can't even.
I think so. Don't the kids say that? I don't know.
Look, them and their skateboards.
We've got an awesome show for y'all today. We are kicking it back to not Middle Earth, but the planet Earth for some Squire Select. Of course, this is a favorite longtime series that we've done here on Country Squire Radio, where we pair some delectable, delicious pipe tobacco with some sometimes really quality whiskey and sometimes mediocre whiskey, to be quite frank. But the pipe tobacco is
always good. We've done Old Charter twice.
We've done that twice. But today we've got some whiskeys that we have never done on the show before. At least I don't think we have. I'm pretty sure we haven't, actually. And that is, yeah, that and we got some good ones. We got some good ones.
We
today.
Did, yes. Man. We went to the top shelf today, and really excited about this. So, you know, as you know, we regularly when we do this, we'll kind of take it as an opportunity just to fellowship, break bread, enjoy strong drink together, and you know, generally that comes in the form of brown water. Sometimes we do wine. We've done. tea, we've done gin and you know, different types of you know, liqueur products, but you know, generally we stick to either scotch or you know, some variety of whiskey, whether it be bourbon or rye. And and so yeah, today we have are going back to that stable of you know, the richer, bolder flavors that we know and love, and we're going to start out today with something delicious.
Yes,
that my friend Bo spent a little coin on.
You know, I'm in town. I spend some money, and when I come to Mississippi, man, I like to spend my money.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You know, your dollar goes farther here.
That's right.
Right.
No, I'm all about stimulating the economy and also spend a little extra on some good things. And this is certainly a good thing to spend some extra on.
That's good,
Man. We are kicking things off here with the Macallan. Let me tell you something about Macallan. This is a very popular brand of scotch, and it is, if I'm not mistaken, considered one of the top like two or three, like second or third highest selling like single malt scotches out there. You know, paired with honestly some names I'm not as a fan of, to be honest, like Glenfiddich and Glenlivet, like not necessarily what I consider my go-to scotches.
Yeah, I mean they're
top sellers because of the price point.
Incredibly, I like, you know, Glenlivet. I always have. But the, you know, Macallan, this is kind of a little step above. Macallan has kind of been seen historically as the Dunhill of the Scotch world.
Okay,
you know, it kind of it's the old respected name, you know, that's revered. It's not really the coolest kid on the block, but it's definitely like the most privileged and the wealthiest.
There you go. That's actually a good way to say it.
Yeah.
And actually, it goes in. So Macallan is actually a signature drink for a television character that kind of fits that remark, actually.
Yeah.
So there's a television show, short-lived. I guess they got six seasons when it was all said and done. But there was a show called Community, and it had kind of a cult following.
Yeah.
And so the one of the main characters of that, it was an ensemble cast, but one of the main characters was a guy named Jeff Winger, who was a lawyer who cheated on his bar exam or never actually graduated from law school or something like that. So he had to go back to community college to get the remaining credits so he could go back to being a lawyer.
Yeah.
And so he always had this kind of air of like, you know, I'm better than everyone else. He could talk his way out of any situation or into any situation. He was kind of that guy, right? And whenever you saw him going out to a restaurant or to a bar or anything like that, he always ordered a Macallan Neat. That was kind of his go-to beverage of choice. Much as you might consider like Ron Swanson synonymous with Lagavulin, had Jeff Winger the same kind of following that Ron Swanson had, you would know that he was a Macallan Neat kind of guy.
Yeah. And Macallan is, you know, one of those things that has... it's one of those whiskeys that has an element of sophistication to it. It's very clean, relatively complex, but it's just straightforward, you know, for the most part. This is a whiskey that, you know, you're, when you're drinking it, you know you're tasting something that has had time and effort put into it. But like a Dunhill pipe, you know, it doesn't have maybe the, you know, the fanciest stem or the most dramatic profile or, you know, styling or anything like that. But it's just very, very good.
Yeah,
and you know that something special has happened here. And today we have the Macallan 12-year-old sherry oak cask. What they've done here, you know, obviously all the rage, you know, with different whiskeys, particularly different scotches, is, you know, they've taken the spirit and then they've finished it up in some other form of barrel in order to impart this different kind of flavor. And so from the bottle, the Macallan Sherry Oak 12-year-old reveals the unrivaled commitment to the mastery of wood and spirit for which the Macallan has been known since it was established in 1824. When matured exclusively in Oloroso Sherry Seasoned Oak casks from Jerez, Spain, our rich, fruity, and full-bodied new-make spirit is transformed into a classic single malt. The sherry-seasoned oak cask delivers a rich and complex single malt characteristic by spice and dried fruit flavors. I really like this. Do you want to describe what you're kind of looking at here, Bo?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it is a very simple bottle. You do have kind of the gold elements that are kind of around that to try to give you that feeling of like, ooh, gold, special.
Luxury.
Yeah, luxury, exactly. You do have kind of the tall house logo right above the Macallan. It's got kind of the competing various fonts that you often see, although not to the like crazy hipster capacity that you see on more modern brands or anything of that nature.
Yeah.
But there is something about like the cursive the before going into Macallan that gives you that sense of, like you said, sophistication, that sense of like, you know, again.
Oh, we're at the country club.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, yeah, so the bottle communicates what it is. And what it is, you know, a little cut above, but at the same time, not like, you know, you're not... This wasn't like put away with like, you know, for a million years and, you know, has this kind of like graced down from the heavens or anything. This is just a really good scotch, or at least so I say. We should really kind of toast so we can kind of start stuffing this.
Well, let's do that.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
Now, I should mention, this is great. Normally, when we've been doing this apart.
Yeah.
I'll typically clink the two bottles that we have together into the mic.
Right.
To give that sense, that feel as though we were clinking glasses.
Yeah. However, a plastic Dixie cup doesn't quite have the same.
It doesn't. Like, the reality is that is like the more authentic Squire Select. It's always in these little Dixie cups that we're drinking.
Yeah. No, that's right. That's right. It is the more authentic experience here. And today that is no different.
I love it, man. This is, it's a very sweet scotch. Very, very smooth. You got a lot of like, you know, strong fruit notes. You got kind of that apple and kind of the citrusy orange, kind of like a very sweet orange type of taste.
Yeah.
Toffiness is in there. I know some people like comment on like there being like elements of vanilla. I never quite pick up on elements of vanilla as much in honestly, like even like bourbons that have like a strong vanilla flavor. Mm-hmm. Like I sometimes never notice that's there. And when people point it out, it almost ruins it for me.
Yeah.
But even with this, like I don't personally pick that up, but I do know that some do.
Yeah, no, they do. And a lot of folks with this particular one get a plummy flavor that you don't really get in a lot of scotches. You know, you think about scotch, thinks, you know, folks immediately, their mind strays towards the peat mossiness that you might have. You know, with Macallan and you know, some other whiskeys like this, there's more of a plumminess that's very stone fruit rich, you know, kind of earthy, ruddy sweetness that's just very, very elegant, not over the top. What's nice about this is that you do recognize the sweetness of the sherry. It is there, and it, the Macallan 12, you're paying for this good experience. Obviously, it's not a cheap bottle. I think this goes for about $90 here in our state. But you know, this is a whiskey that the sweetness is subtle enough for you to appreciate the scotch flavor that's still there. A lot of times with these infused or double oaked whiskeys, you get almost too much. It's almost a flavor bomb of the sherry, or the particularly the ones that are port cask. You know, these are just so sweet over the top. But the Macallan sherry oak cask really, I think, pulls it off nicely. It's just enough of the sweetness to keep you interested without you immediately thinking, oh, that's sherry. Like, you can taste it, but it's not
distracting.
It's not distracting from the scotch. That's a great way to put it. Really good. Obviously it's smooth because it is, you know, a Macallan. It's not overly peaty, although I think the peat is there more than you would anticipate from most Macallans. I was actually surprised at the smokiness of the whiskey, but you do get more of that plummy, earthy flavor, which does have just a little bit of spice on the back end. It's really nice. So it is a little peatier than expected, though.
Yeah, man.
Yep.
So, all right. So what do we do? Like, what do we pair this with? Are we leaning into kind of that sweet flavor? Or are we trying to like contradict that a little bit, balance it out?
Yeah, I think we're leaning in a little bit, but we're adding a little bit of strength that might be missing. Of course, it's hard to add to something that's so, you know, so good like a Macallan 12. But the tobacco we're pairing today with it is a Blue Blood tobacco, just like the Macallan. It's a tobacco that's been around a long time and has a lot of, you know, kind of evokes a lot of feeling of sophistication and that kind of aura about it. But anyway, we are talking today about Peterson Royal Yacht. Of course, this is a former Dunhill blend.
Okay, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, Royal Yacht. Of course, you hear that and you think, it's the Hamptons or, you know, whatever.
It's a similar brand communication.
Yeah,
to be fair.
There is. You know, it's just one of these old Blue Blood, blue chip tobaccos that, you know, has a sense of sophistication and, you know, mystique about it. And so we kind of go with that. It's a Virginia blend, something that has a really nice strength to it. You know, the Virginia blends tend to be more kind of medium bodied. Royal Yacht, it just has a strong flavor to it. It's a strong tobacco. You get these lemon and brown Virginias that are in there that are ready rubbed, but you know, there's just enough flavoring in there to make it interesting. There's a plum topping that they put on there, which most people that smoke Royal Yacht don't consider it necessarily an aromatic, but you know, I guess technically it does have that little bit of topping that's there. And it just adds, I think, to the flavor profile. This is going to add to the Macallan 12 without distracting from it. But we're going to add a little bit of strength here, a little more body, something that's going to kind of take the strength up a little bit, add some heat, add some pepper. That's what we have here in the Royal Yacht. So, really good tobacco, formerly a Dunhill blend, but is now marketed under the Peterson brand. And same tobacco, it's still made in the same factory in Denmark.
Yeah. Man, it makes total sense. I mean, I think that sounds like a delicious pairing right there. And as I say, there is something ideal about kind of they're talking to the same folks. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could almost see like the two being sold together in like a box package.
And it's a good point. If that were legal in our state, would definitely happen. Right. Yeah. But you know, it's one of those things I think that like there is, you know, regardless of how good another product is, there are some people that just are not going to drink something if it's not Macallan.
Right.
Or they're not going to smoke something if it's not one of these old Dunhill brands or, you know, which is now Peterson. They're just not going to do it. And, you know, that's just McClellan, to some degree, was the same way. You had folks that's just all they smoked. But even Dunhill Tobaccos, I think, were more, it was a brand identity kind of thing. It's like the folks that, you know, drive BMWs and have BMW hats and keychains and jackets and apparel. They're just into that culture. They just like it. They love it. And that's their thing. And so, you know, I think the two complement each other pretty nicely. But it is a good pairing. I think the nice strength that's added to the semi-sweetness of the Royal Yacht will go with the Macallan 12 really nicely, particularly the Sherry Oak.
Yeah. Man, it's a great pairing. Really, really excited to continue to enjoy this with a little on the yacht, if you will.
Pinkies out.
All right. So this next one, though, I feel like in terms of you know, what we're trying to kind of communicate or who we're talking to, might be a bit of a gear change, but certainly not a quality change.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, this one is something new for both of us. Actually, both of us have not had this particular whiskey. This is Old Elk. Bo, do you want to read the back of the bottle there? Really attractive bottle. I really like this bottle.
Yeah, gorgeous bottle. I mean, I'll just kind of make note of it real quick. So it's you've got at the very top kind of what looks like I'm pretty sure this is like a faux, not actually like a log kind of chopped off here, but you almost kind of have
like that, a log cross section.
Yeah. Kinda. Like a branch was like, you know, crammed right into the top. And then you've got, you know, at the top, the Old Elk kind of distillery logo with these kind of two elks, on flanking either side of what appears to be a barrel that is aflamed with some sort of torch in USA right on the top. There's an all Americanness that is being communicated instantly when you see this. Now this one, as with the other, does have the various fonts competing that, again, we do see a lot of times in
constantly in the whiskey, or really in the spirit of, you know, universe.
Very true. And now this one is more kind of hipster-esque. This is kind of speaking more towards kind of that bold in your face, all over the place. Here's, you know, here's a written signature, and here is kind of the flair, the font with the flair, if you will. But also, you know, there's something, you know, less busy than you might expect, even with all of that going on. Off the back, you said it has at Old Elk, we crafted a remarkably smooth and innovative spirit that transcends tradition. With our four decades of experience, we have influenced the American bourbon landscape more than Old Elk's master distiller, Greg Metz.
Yep.
Greg Metz, guided by this skill, Old Elk's bourbon uses four times more malted barley than conventional recipes, creating a rich, smooth flavor in harmony with the caramel cues evoked by charred barrels and spicy notes of rye. Now that just sounds delicious.
I know. Yeah, this is, it is beautiful. It's got, you know, just a nice warm honey color to it. And it's something that, you know, immediately from the nose of this particular whiskey, it's just very pleasant. 88 proof. This in our state goes for about $50 a bottle, which for the quality of this, I think, is very reasonable. It's a very attractive bottle. It's something that, you know, is not gaudy by any means, but just has a very handsome feel to it, a kind of the apothecary feel, but not maybe if the apothecary were, you know, met the old West kind of thing. Just a really handsome, just a beautiful whiskey.
Now, I got to talk about the founder of Old Elk real quick here. Kurt Richardson. Now, this is interesting because in preparation for this episode, I know people are probably shocked to find out that we do preparation for these episodes.
I think they probably are.
Yeah. But in preparation for this episode, I was very, very shocked to find that, you know, the founder of this is a man named Kurt Richardson, who is also the founder of a company called Otterbox. Now, Otterbox...
Otterbox.
Yeah, no, so you have to understand, like, back before, a long time ago, before my kind of career in, like, broadcasting and podcasting.
Yeah,
and,
you worked
and
in,
audio,
the, telecommunications
telecommunications industry. And, like, cell phones and that sort of thing. Otterbox, I remember when those cases hit the market around the same time that, you know, the iPhone was out and you had, like, the Androids and everything were kind of coming into prominence. And, you know, people would drop them, and, of course, they would shatter like crazy. Otterbox was one of the first cell phone cases that, like, was practically indestructible.
They were made for people like us.
Dude, I remember, like, they would come by and you could put in, you know, the phone in the Otterbox. You could hurl it across the room. Like, you know, they'd never want you to do that or anything.
Right.
But occasionally, I would actually do that back when I was in sales, just to show people how sturdy those things. I was a Otterbox. I still am an Otterbox loyalist. Well, okay, so that technically that's not true. My most recent phone doesn't have an Otterbox.
Bo, like, cringes and pulls his phone out, and he's like, dang it.
Well, I just remembered I just got a new phone, and for the first time ever, I'm trying a different case. But it makes me super nervous because it is the first phone
I've had. This is going to be the one that breaks. Yeah.
It probably will. And so that's the thing. Otterbox, like, is a premium product that is, like, you know, talk about, like sturdy quality. Like,
yeah.
Like, that is made not just because it's trying to be all fancy or anything. More often than not, it's not that fancy. It makes your phone look like a tank, and because it basically is.
Hey, it's clunky, and it doesn't fit in your pocket well, and all these other things. But, you know, you're going to pay for it, number one. But number two, it works.
Yeah. So this is wild, because, like, there are few products that I, like, get behind and, like, I'm like a fan of.
Yeah.
Gorin Brothers hats is one. I'm a big fan of them.
Yep. You're wearing one now.
But Otterbox, man, Otterbox is one of those brands, and I know it's such a niche product because it's specifically like a cell phone case.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, it is that good that it's worth taking note of. And so when I'm sitting here and I'm reading about Kurt Richardson founding Old Elk, and then I see that he was also the founder of Otterbox, I was like, no, the same?
You're like, really?
And I was got to be like a different, because, you know, you can have like various companies of the same name that are in completely different industries.
Yeah, sure.
Uh-huh. We got like two different primos. One's like a hunting goods and one's like a breakfast place.
Right.
You know, it's like completely different. So, I mean, like you can have that, but no, same dude, also big in philanthropy and investment, like a really, really fascinating read up. I really kind of encourage y'all to check out Kurt Richardson. He's been on How I Built This, if I'm not mistaken, as well. And a fascinating dude. So I say all this because I have not yet I have not taken a sip yet of this bourbon. Any pre-gaming was completely on the Macallan, and I had not pre-gamed on this at all.
Oh, it's great. I've had a few drams of this, and they've really thoroughly enjoyed it. I think Bo will too.
Well, I'm excited for it, man. Shall we cheers?
Cheers.
Cheers. Clink.
Plastic tink. Clink.
Ooh, wow. Yeah. So you get that sweetness, but you also immediately get that heat, which dissipates. That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, you get kind of that rye kick early on, but it doesn't get in the way overall of the bourbon. It does have kind of a medicinal aftertaste to it, but, like, it's, yeah, no, this is a... This is good. Yeah, the rye is there, but it doesn't overpower. And, like, you know, listeners know, I love rye and bourbon. If you can kind of push the rye a little bit, make sure that it's present and, like, makes like itself known, I'm here for it.
But I think you nailed it. It dissipates in a way that leaves you kind of wanting more, and so you keep sipping.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
And, like, the sweetness almost, like, teases the tongue on top of that, because it's not... It's an interesting, yeah.
This is a malty, caramelly whiskey that has just the right amount of rye in order to kind of give you a pleasant sting and then you know, leave you ready for more. It's really, really good. I want to read this from their website. They have this specific proofing patent that they do I don't know if it's patented or just the name of it is trademarked, but it's a specific type of bourbon or of proofing that they do for this. From Old Elk's website, traditionally the bourbon proofing process takes 24 to 48 hours. However, we choose to do it for significantly longer, weeks instead of days, and in smaller increments to keep the liquid cool when going from barrel to bottling proof.
Huh.
We call this patient technique our slow cut proofing process, which is used for our flagship bourbon. We see this critical slow-cut proofing step as not only adding to the ideal smooth and rich character of Old Elk, but also demonstrating our ongoing commitment to making the highest quality and smoothest bourbon whiskey without cutting any corners. And so what's interesting, when we talk about proofing, that's, you know, you add, when it comes out of the barrel, you're adding water to the liquid in order to reach the certain strength that you're going for. And that's the whole point of it, the proof of the whiskey. And so at this level, what they're doing is they're, you know, just taking their time with this, which allows, in their words, the ability of the whiskey to retain more of its, you know, initial rough edges that it's getting from that that barrel. And so more of the character that was imparted there is not lost when it goes into the bottle. Just very, very interesting. And, you know, who knows? Obviously, they, you know, believe in this and market around it and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it does make for a very, very good whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
They say Old Elk includes three quality ingredients, malted barley, rye, and corn. By investing in our bourbon and using four times more malted barley than traditional recipes, the bourbon generates sweet, light components. The malted barley combined with spicy essence of clove from the rye and the traditional rich bourbon character from the corn creates an overall robust taste palate. And so, you know, again, caramel, vanilla, yes, but it's just a nice, earthy, warm, semi-spicy whiskey. It just is one of those that is a workhorse, I think. It's a whiskey that's very, very flavorful, has just the right amount of heat. You know, you'll get kind of those maple-y notes to it, the oatiness that's there, that's very, very pleasing and full, but not overpowering. It really is good. Really, yeah. Really good.
Man, this is I'm so glad that I like this.
I know, right?
Because I got excited when I found out about the founder. And I will say this as kind of one little last mention before we kind of dive into the pairing here, like seeing somebody with his kind of career and starting companies and working in various products that, you know, cell phone cases and bourbon, it is not two products. Like you can easily see a path from pipe tobacco to bourbon, but to get those cell phone cases in there, that seems a little wild. So, I mean, it really, you know, for someone who has had, you know, multiple businesses and many failures,
yeah,
and
sure,
like a few successes here and there along the way, like it's really nice to be like, yeah, you know, you can always reinvent yourself. You do not have to tie yourself to one industry. Like it is completely possible to be successful in multiple industries and not have to feel like you're trapped in one. So anyway, I'm just going to say cheers to Kurt. Thank you for this bourbon. And I am really excited to see what John David is going to pair it with.
Man, I felt like this was such a straightforward, high quality whiskey that it needed a tobacco to complement that. And so today we were matching it with Cornell & Diehl's Burley Flake Number 1. This is a popular tobacco, been around for a long time, but it's a dark Burley and Red Virginia mixture that has just a dash of Perique. And so we're talking about a full-bodied flake tobacco, something that is earthy and rich, has those stone fruit notes that similar to what we talked about in the Royal Yacht, although it's not flavored here. This is something that just has a nice natural plumminess to it, which is very appealing. But the Burley here and the Virginias just really pair quite well together, I think. Full-bodied, strong, high nicotine content, just the right amount of bite. It basically doubles down on everything that Old Elk is. We're just kind of, contributing to that and not trying to compete with it too much here. This is an interesting whiskey. It's complex. It's got those nice caramelly notes, which a Burley that's properly done is going to feature. You know, I think it's a good match.
Yeah, man. It sounds like a really, really good one.
It's an old favorite. This is a tobacco that, been around a while and just very, very good. It's available in 2-ounce tins. And of course, Cornell & Diehl does a really good job with Burleys. They, master Burley users. They sneak it in everywhere and are just really, really good at it. So highly recommend it. It's something that, you know, is pretty readily available. And I think you'll enjoy it if you like an earthy, full blend that has a nice full mouthfeel, a relatively pleasant room note, but something that is just really, really rich and full and hearty, hearty smoke.
I love it, man. Good stuff. I mean, it's the kind of bourbon that kind of requires a good hearty smoke to go along with it.
It does.
I think, as you mentioned, because it does kind of encourage you to keep on sipping.
Yeah.
So you almost kind of need something to like break that up a little bit. And like, it's almost like you're entranced and you kind of keep on going. You need something to kind of break it up that standpoint.
You're like, well, I just had a sip, but I want another.
I want another.
And I want another. I want another. And I want another. And if I keep wanting more, there are meetings for this that I can, that'll help. But, you know, right. That's true. But, and we don't want to overdo it, but at the same time, it's, you know, it's something that really does draw you back for more. It's a delicious, you know, whiskey. I will say about the Old Elk, it's not over the top complex,
no.
But it is complex enough to keep you interested.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've had whiskeys on here before. Matter of fact, the one I got in trouble for last time, the Bob Dylan whiskey that we had.
Are you sure it was Bob Dylan that made that whiskey?
Shut up. Okay. The Heaven's Door or whatever. You know, that whiskey, it was really, really good. And, you know, we had some of that leading up to the show that we did, which we always try and, you know, try different tobaccos to go with it. But then on the backside, I continued to, you know, drink this bottle after that show. Realized that the Heaven's Door, it was a little one-dimensional, very good.
Yeah.
But it was, not something that was... It was almost
not complex. It was you couldn't say that, yeah.
Super complex. And, you know, the Old Elk, it's not complex, but it's complex enough to... you know, to keep you interested, but it's not so much so that it's cute, you know, where folks try to, you know, start to introduce all this, you right. know, these crazy ingredients and we're putting this in this kind of barrel that has nothing to do with this. And,
right.
You know, we
right,
think
right,
you're
right.
going to, it's just a good, straightforward whiskey. I like it. I'm proud of it and think you'll enjoy it too.
That's right. And I have a feeling if I poured it over my Android and threw my Android against the wall right now, it'd probably break because I don't have an OtterBox on my phone. And now I wish.
Really hope that you don't do that.
Yeah, I probably won't. but I tell you what I will do, and that's talk about our good friends at Missouri Beer Shop.
That is right, man. Every single episode, we keep coming back for more, and that's because Missouri Beer Shop makes this show possible.
That's right.
Go to corncobpipe.com. You can check out plenty of great corncob pipes. And today we're talking about the Great Dane Spool Corncob Pipe.
I love that one, dude.
It is. It's a peanut shaped pipe that's so pretty. It's got just a really nice feel in your hand. It's very ergonomic and a longer pipe. It's got something that you know, just a nice length that, you know, will cool the smoke down just generally. So it comes in a bent and a straight stem, very handsome. It does accommodate a 6mm filter, and again, you can get it at corncobpipe.com. It retails for only $13.29, and go check it out. I know you'll be glad you did.
That's right. And hey, if you've got one, be sure to smoke it this week and take a picture of yourself doing so. It's a great way to let our friends at Missouri Meerschaum know you appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
Pipe question of the week.
Pipe question of the week. Now, man, this one is coming in from Nathan Clay.
Yeah.
I believe I mentioned last week he hooked us up with some different questions and that sort of thing, and possibly some ideas for future episodes as well.
Okay.
In fact, you know, I may even tap into that here later on in the show as well. But here's his question. He said, in the interest of making our already particular and demanding hobby even more particular and demanding, I was wondering how one would go about growing, processing, and blending their own pipe tobacco. Having dug around the internet, I have come across articles about growing and preparing cigars and cigar leaf, but nothing about pipe tobacco. Is there a difference in how tobacco leaves are processed for pipe consumption? What would I need to go from seed to bowl? As mildly bored pandemic pipe puffer, how might I go about adding some true Texas Terrier tobacco into his smoking rotation?
Okay.
Let's give him anything like. All right. So let me pitch this.
He's a glutton for punishment.
Well, so what I love about this is it's a great question. And it's almost a question that demands an episode unto itself, like seed to bowl or something of that nature, like ground to bowl or something of that nature.
Yeah.
So I'm going to challenge you,
okay,
John David, to give us the cliff notes on how we would grow our own pipe tobacco. Can I say that you used to have pipe tobacco leaves growing out in front of the shop?
Yeah.
Is that okay to say?
Yeah, it's fair. It's currently hanging.
It's hanging over the shop.
Hanging in the from the ceiling inside our existing shop.
Right.
That's right.
But is it? It's not illegal in Mississippi to grow pipe tobacco for an ornamental.
Oh, look, shiny red ball.
Squirrel.
Let's talk about something else.
Yeah, we're not lawyers, and yes.
Yeah.
Growing pipe tobacco.
So growing pipe tobacco. The type of tobacco actually that is the strain of Burley that is used for Perique in St. James Parish, Louisiana. Yeah, so interesting. But yeah, shiny red ball, squirrel. Right. So
allegedly.
That's the word.
That's what I meant to say about everything.
I don't know much about growing pipe tobacco, to be honest with you.
Allegedly
growing pipe tobacco. Allegedly, Nathan, you strike me as the kind of person that wants to. I'm going to grow my own tobacco, and then I'm going to cure my own tobacco, and I'm going to process my own tobacco and flavor my own tobacco, and then I'm going to carve a pipe, and it's going to be from a heath tree that I grew, and then I harvested the burl, and then I cured the burl.
I coddled the seedlings of the heath tree.
I did. I whispered to them as it grew, and and watered them every night, and then I carved the pipe 100% by hand, and then you maybe you also extracted from the earth the sulfur that it would take to make the mouthpiece for the ebonite stem. I mean, man, you want to get involved in all the parts of the process, which is great. I'm not an expert in growing pipe tobacco, and so I can't tell you anything about that. I do know that it's very labor intensive. It's very time intensive. It does have some similar characteristics to the cigar tobacco that's out there. So you will see some commonalities there. I mean, how they let the leaves sweat. They have to re-moisturize the leaves. They let them put them in the barns in order to let them hang and air cure. Of course, with tobacco, you have a lot of flue cured leaf and fire cured leaf, which gives it a different characteristic. But anyway, there's just a lot there that I'm not educated on, and leave that to the growers to be educated on, because there's so many talented people there that are more aware of that. But if you wanted to blend your own tobacco, it is something you can do. You know, these are things that folks do. They allegedly grow their own tobacco and allegedly, will use the curing process in their backyard or whatever. You can make your own Cavendish by steaming it. You can flavor your own tobacco with different extracts and products. Allegedly. A favorite with a lot of home blenders is apple cider vinegar. It's something that is can be fun to use. And so do your research there. I'm not a big helper when it comes to growing pipe tobacco.
Allegedly
growing pipe tobacco. But Bo's trying to keep me out of jail.
I'm trying to keep us both out of jail.
That's all it is. good luck on your endeavors. And I'm actually not familiar with this Texas Terroir tobacco. I'm actually not aware of what that is. So that's the first I've ever heard of that.
Yeah.
Man, good luck.
Yeah, allegedly.
That's right.
And if you've got a pipe question for us, thanks so much for that one, Nathan. And hey, if you've got a pipe question for us, send it into the show. That's show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire with the squire.
All right, man. Quick fire questions. Strange places to live, or maybe not. Maybe not strange and
what?
Maybe not live. I don't know. Here we go. You ready? Here we go. Would you rather live in a treehouse or a boathouse?
Treehouse.
I feel like the reason I wouldn't want to live on a boathouse is because it would rock back and forth, but that's technically true of a treehouse.
Is a boathouse different from a houseboat?
I don't know. Same thing, right?
Okay. I'm thinking they're the same thing. Okay. I'd still rather live in a treehouse.
I like the concept of living on the water because you could fish. You always got something to do, and it could provide you food.
Never thought I'd be on a boat.
Right.
It's a big blue watery road.
Typically, this is you. We've been drinking, haven't we?
Poseidon.
Can look at me. Oh.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. All right, next. That's all you get, fans.
Wow, that's amazing. That just happened. I'm gonna go boathouse. I'm going to go boathouse because, like I said, I can fish and you can also travel. It's functional.
Okay.
I like that.
I'm going to be up there with the elves.
Yeah, you go out there with the elves. Underwater or mountaintop? So either living under the sea or up in the mountains.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with underwater. So one of those, you'll be on Instagram or something, just wasting time on your phone.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one, it always happens, and maybe it's just because I research these travel places because I get bored and I'm like, I wonder what it would be like to be in, you know,
to travel.
Yeah. To not be here. Right. Imagine that. Yeah. And so, you know, but I think some of the most captivating images I've ever seen are these hotel rooms that are like in the Maldives, right, or, you know, places like that, that, you know, that are literally underwater, that they've, you know, you imagine taking a boat to a cottage that's sitting in the middle of a lagoon, and then you enter into the cottage that's, you know, sea level, but then in the middle of it, you go downstairs up underneath the level of the ocean, and your hotel room is, you know, next to fishes and coral, yeah, and everything else. You know, I see those photos of that kind of thing, and I'm like, I got to do that. I just, at some point, it's kind of a bucket list thing at this point. Like, yeah. I just want to do that. So keep your mountaintop. I'll live under the water.
Yeah, under the sea. I would be fine with that for like a one-time thing. Like, I mean, like, I've seen those pictures too. It's like Instagram gold, right? Like, it's, yeah, just, it looks cool. But I think, I don't know, you know, if you get like a crack in the wall, then...
Oh, you're screwed.
You're going to die.
Right. Like, you know what I mean? So, but on a mountaintop, you know, you think it, depending on the mountain, it's on the one mountain of those things where, you know, or you're going to, you know, need oxygen tanks up there.
I
because
that's true.
I don't know. I just, I'd rather be underwater.
Yeah, I like the mountains, man. Beautiful views. And yeah, I'm going to go mountain. You take your under the water, under the sea living. Okay, this is interesting. Hidden within a national monument or high atop a building in a big city with your name on it.
What?
All right. So hidden within a national monument.
Yeah. Okay.
Or high atop a building in a big city with your name on
it. With my name on it.
Right. Gosh. So you're either hidden behind something that's prominent for somebody else, or you're like, yeah, on this like pillar of your own, you know, achievement.
Yeah. I guess I'd rather be in the monument because I'm a little too introverted for living in a building that's got my name on it. In the penthouse.
So that everybody knows exactly where you are.
Like, yeah, like, this is mine. I did it. I live here at all times. And people, like, have, you know, telescopes pointed at your windows trying to get a peek. I don't want any part of that. Yeah, I'd rather be hidden within the National Monument, a monument to someone else with maybe a small suite of apartments, you know, behind the, I don't know, the Jefferson Memorial or something.
York Plaza, baby.
Yeah, you want it gilded.
Give
you
me
want
that
it,
Scott, not gilded. No, I refute that.
Stone lions and everything else.
Absolutely not. But I would love, you know, big. Give me a big building, put York on it, and
York,
you know,
Plaza,
high rise York Plaza.
Okay,
be great. That's that. Yeah, I'd much rather go for that. I'm more of in the city living.
Fair enough.
Although, you know, it's all, you know, like. Like the Mount Rushmore type deal, you like fly into somebody's ear and that's how you get to your, like, that's supervillain territory.
That
right
is,
there,
man. That, yeah, is. Yep.
All right. And then finally, this is great. Would you rather live in the country squire shop or in a country squire station wagon down by the river?
Wow. Wow. I don't know who came up with these questions, but this is awesome.
You're welcome.
Oh, thanks, Bo.
Yeah.
I basically already live in the country squire shop. See, that's the problem with this question is I'm like, oh, it'd be fun to live in my shop because you'd be surrounded by pipe tobacco and fun people. And
what's that like?
And it's like, oh, wait, that's currently life.
This,
like,
is your life.
I go home occasionally to sleep and, you know, play with my daughter. But, you know, other than that, yeah. So I'm going to mix it up. I'm going to go with the country squire station wagon. Down by the river, because you're in you can move the station wagon. You're around. It is a country squire station wagon, so it's roomy. It might have that, you know, seat package that it had specially made for it with the crazy wraparound, yeah, couch in the back, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. And you know, and you're down by the river, so you can, you know, go catch your fish and stuff, and then, you know, roast them on an open fire there by the end of your open hatchback. I think that sounds great.
Plus, you have plenty of time to smoke your pipe when you're living in a van down by the river.
Oh,
bazinga.
Rest in Rest in peace. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, that's a Chris Farley reference on a Squire Select episode right there.
There it is. Yep.
That's beautiful. Well, hey, that's quick fire questions. If you've got some quick fire questions for, oh, I didn't answer. Van Dyle by the river. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to live in that van down by the river.
Yeah.
There's too many characters that come into the Country Squire. I love it, like 80% of them, but.
Hey, but that 20%.
That 20%. That's a lot of, rough, that's man. A lot of work.
There's some, you know, it's some fruits and nuts. In
everybody in listening to this show is in the 80%.
No, they're in the 80%.
That y'all are in the 80%.
Yeah.
But that 20%, though.
Yeah, I mean, except maybe one or two of you.
Kind
yeah.
of crazy, huh? Right. All right. Hey. Oh, man. This is, if you've got quick fire questions for us, be sure to send it in the show. That's show at countrysquireradio.com. And hey, while you're at it, if you'd like to keep up with us throughout the week, you can do so. At Squire Radio is the show's handle on Twitter. You can follow John David Cole at John David Cole. You can follow the show's handle at _CountrySquire. But all that information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com.
Ba-da!
Yeah, we've been drinking. I love Squire Select episodes.
I'm for it. Yeah. And frankly, I needed it.
Yes. Of course, everything that is said was under the influence and only allegedly stated on this episode.
Right.
Yeah, so I want to restate that. So the only thing that we said while sober was when we said allegedly.
Not perfectly sober.
Allegedly.
Let's go have a night.
Let's go have a night.
See you, brother.